This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
If you don't have the Jungle Man Bruce Grobline here, you won't win the title.
Hang on, have a look at your watch.
We will become the record holders.
So weird you get such a hard-on for the super vet.
Most double cheek kisses in 30 seconds.
The 3PMs are in chaos.
Where's the pizza come from?
Things were getting silly.
I didn't know you were religious,
Chris. Well, for goals I am. Hello and welcome to another episode of That Peter Crouch Podcast with me, Peter Crouch, Chris Stark and Statman Dave with me as usual. You right, boys? So good?
Lads, I haven't done a pod for a while, but my head's been a bit fuzzy since the clocks went back. Feels like I'm living in a different time zone.
I feel like this was quite a secretive clock going back one.
In what sense?
Well, I don't think it was enough press.
I agree.
I feel that one crept up on me.
Yeah. Well, I feel the same about Crouch Fest, ironically, but we'll get into that. We'll get into that very shortly. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Do you know what I mean? Like, usually you know, like, people go, oh, does it go forward or back tonight?
But this,
like,
is the best one. You know, if you're in a club and it hits 2 a.m. and the club closes at 2, can you legitimately then go to the bouncer and say, hang on, have a look at your watch, 1 a.m.?
But do they not? Do they not?
No, they 100% did. That's why I was sort of lost.
Yeah, you had another hour in the club.
Because it was another hour in the club and then it was like 1:30 and I'm like, why am I so tired? It was actually 2:30.
Mm. Yeah.
Just blew my mind.
Where were you, out of interest?
Manchester. Blues Kitchen. I had a great time. Oh, that was a great time.
Are we the only, like, nation that do this? The clocks.
No. Piss around with the clock.
Why? Well, it's just so, it's such a it's so mysterious, isn't it? Like, why do we do it? And no one else does it, do they?
I also wonder, is 2 a.m. the best time to gain an hour? Do you know what I mean? Like, if they're going to change it at any point, like, what happens with the 3 o'clock kickoffs, for example? If the clocks go back an hour at 3, imagine the carnage for a football fan that's 3 or 4 pints in.
You're making,
trying to work out when they should be at the stadium.
My head hurt already.
Isn't that a massive bonus, though? If you've had 2 or 3 pints and then you realise you have another hour.
Yeah.
Well, what about if it went back like at half? Like, you'd have to play for another hour.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And I think the Prime Minister or King Charles, imagine he had the power to go, I'm going to put the clocks back now, because it's going to happen at some point.
Bang,
but
gone.
Only when he puts the tweet out does it happen. So it's like, be real, and then suddenly it's like the 3 PMs are in chaos, or like Strictly Come Dancing. Everyone's waiting to watch it. What time does it start? 7-ish? You know, suddenly Rishi decides, bam, I'm going, we're doing it now. It's that sort of power that these guys should have, I think. A bit more of that.
It's a strange one, the whole clocks thing. I don't know where we are now. Is it lighter? When's it lighter?
So Crouchfest, lads, we're pretty close. How's the organisation, the prep going?
Mm. Yeah, well, we're beavering away, aren't we, Chris? So loads going on. We have booked a few big acts. I don't know if we should tell people a couple.
No, I would like us to keep as much of it a surprise as possible, because I think the first Crouch Fest was good. People are legitimately asking questions, though, going, like, boys, it's Wembley Arena. We're buying tickets without knowing anything. And we should say thank you for that trust as well. It's not something we take lightly.
Well, last time we managed to prove that we could pull it together. It was epic.
Yeah. But I think the thing is with this, I do understand, and there have been discussions about this, there are, you know, it's a huge event and it would be nice for people to have a flavour of what they can look forward to. Mm. So we should say there is so much stuff up in the air. It's proper. I don't think there's anything wrong in saying it's, what's the phrase, Dave? Is it arse against the sea or are flying something? Anyway, the point is, there will be stuff sorted last minute.
What was that saying?
Arse against the water?
Arse against the fire?
Sea of the pants or something like that. Is it one of those?
Yeah, seat of the pants.
Flying by the seat of our pants.
That's why I couldn't be a pundit.
Yeah, flying by the seat.
What's the phrase, Crouchy?
I think it's flying by the seat of your pants, I think.
Fuck knows what that means.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know, but thanks for bringing it up.
There will be some of that. Some of the stuff we are arranging is going to be last minute.
It's going to the wire.
But it will be all the better for it.
You've got musicians potentially, sports people you guys are talking to. Again, I don't have a clue what you guys are talking about, but rumours. Exciting.
Yeah, some other big names and guests.
Even the no's are funny. I think once the event is done, yeah, we should go through some of the messages that were sent out.
You know what?
Some of the ideas. There's one that I put on WhatsApp earlier that I've just had involving a drummer. Which is really good if we can get him to do it.
Yeah.
I don't think he needs to be dressed as a gorilla for it to work. And I know there was a bit of a debate around that. But anyway, let's keep some surprises.
Right, lads. One of the things that we're doing the Messi and Ronaldo referendum. We're working out who's the better player. We're going to be doing that at Crouchfest. Have you got any more texts or anything back, Crouchy, from people that you've been speaking to?
Yeah, well, like so far, I was just sort of going down the phone book, really. Obviously, Sean Dyche got back to us, Anthony Joshua, Michael McIntyre got back to us, didn't he? So I've actually got a few more. Flintoff got back to me.
Did he?
Ronaldo or Messi?
Flintoff, I'm going to say Ronaldo.
I reckon Ronaldo as well.
I do, Crouchy. What a question that is. Messi or Ronaldo? It's like picking one of your favourite kids. Problem is, in my house, I got one of my lads who just loves Ronaldo, other one loves Messi, so I can't bring myself. And they keep blinding me with stats and telling me why one's better. I can sit on the fence here. At times, Messi's been better, especially now. And Ronaldo, I'm going Ronaldo. Lives near me. He's got cars, but Messi has as well. But Ronaldo, having said that, none of them are Haaland. Even before City, early now, and he's like a young Peter Crouch. Before Crouch, he got his pace and power. I hope that helps. It was nice to see you the other day. Oh, I needed that. Pulled over. I was desperate. It was one of them where you go, oh, anyway, I'm off for now. I'm on my oldies. See you later.
Fair play to him. Ronaldo, man. Fancy that.
That was great when he turned up at the pub.
No, it's brilliant, wasn't it? So funny.
He turned out, if you missed this, it was on a previous podcast. We were recording the pod and Flintoff just turned up out of nowhere. Because we recorded down by the toilets. He'd got out of a car because he just desperately needed a piss and turned up. Which is, to be fair, I really don't want to be that guy. A bit shithouse of him to come in and just use the toilets without stopping for a drink in there.
We used it as a shithouse, didn't we?
Yeah, he's...
But, no, I've done that loads of times. Have you not?
I have. But I think I always feel like it's... Yeah, I sort of become a bit like an actor, like one of the extras in EastEnders. So I pretend to be in the pub a little bit and go downstairs and
do
go
you?
To the yeah, because you have to be sort of look like you're, or you,
do
pretend,
you actually pretend
to point at someone on the other side.
Like, do you?
Well, because I don't know how much the landlord is clocking. It'd be good to hear from landlords if you really do clock the situation of who's.
Yeah, if you are a landlord, please get in touch because, like, you know, people are running in just to use your toilet.
I think there's a pub economy where I go, I spend a lot of money in pubs, so that entitles me a sort of season ticket to any pub toilet. But I think there should be some sort of pass maybe that you could, I mean, maybe that's an improvement, like, you know, some sort of, you know, like the gyms where you can do the gyms in any town.
Yeah.
Should be like that, but just for all pubs.
Yeah, well, something to ticket. Ponder.
Yeah, something to think about anyway.
Supervet, anyway. Supervet got in touch. And now you are not across Supervet's work, are you?
No.
Or you don't.
No.
I don't know where you've been. Like, seriously, how can you not know who Supervet is?
It's so weird you get such a hard-on for the Supervet because...
He's been in my house. I've been out for dinner with him. If you are coming to Crouchfest and your dog does have a dodgy hip, Supervet will be there. We'll throw the dog on stage and see if Supervet can heal it.
Yeah.
He could, 100%.
Are dogs allowed at Crouchfest? Blind dogs will be fine, won't they? Yeah, if you're blind listening to this and have a dog with a dodgy hip, perhaps we could use it for the Supervet. Let us know.
Where he is anyway. Is his take on the Messi and Ronaldo debate?
Hi, Peter. Noel Fitzpatrick, Supervet here. Ronaldo versus Messi. Well,
It's not going to come down to who scored more goals, more hat tricks, more titles scored in every minute of the 19. No, sir.
Crazy stuff.
It's about attitude to adversity, in my opinion. He might appear sullen on the outside, but his discipline, his state of persistent readiness, his hunger is, in my opinion, unparalleled in world football. And, of course, as a fan of Man United, I am, however, biased. But for me, Ronaldo every time, my friend Ronaldo every time.
Strong answer from Supervet.
Messi, currently this season, has been directly involved in a goal every 56 minutes.
About the time of this recording, I'm hearing he might be going to Inter Miami.
He may be, yeah. But then Barcelona also knocking around.
Financially, they can't. Surely can't.
And Messi surely doesn't want to play in the Europa League next season.
Anyway, Joe Cole's been in touch.
It's always a tough one because we're just so blessed to play in our era. But I'm going to go with a little fella because I just think he does things that other players can only dream of. And I can sort of see what Ronaldo does, although I could never do it myself. And it's incredible and he's amazing. With Messi, it's like I find it impossible to comprehend some of the passes, some of the vision, the goals, everything. So, but we are lucky to have them both.
That's from a maverick himself, Joe Cole.
Short back and short, though, isn't it? I just reckon statistically, more people under 5'5" are going to vote Messi.
I reckon you're right. There'll be more under that height voting Messi.
Right, should we get into some messages? Got a message here from Andrew. Says, I want to help with an idea for Crouchfest. What about breaking or setting a world record? I was thinking Crouchy could set one for the most powerful header of a ball. I've had a quick look and I can't see a record for this. I think this could be a great idea, boys.
I do have one. World records, they presented me when I scored the most header goals in the Premier League. They presented me with a certificate to say that I had a world record. I didn't ask too many questions because obviously it's a Premier League record. So how can it be a world record?
Yeah. Very good point.
But I did accept it. There are question marks over it.
I think that's fair. I also think that's very, I was going to say it's quite honourable of you to acknowledge that that's not a world record for a Premier League.
But the thing is, don't Guinness, aren't they in charge of it? And they've said it is. So then therefore it is.
Yeah.
So Crouch, you've got one. What we could do is me and Chris could also get one on Crouchfest. There's a few that I looked at that I think very achievable.
Yeah, they have to be achievable in the sense that we can do them at Wembley Arena though. Just like before we get into this, we had this idea about Parched hitting a midge's dick from I can't remember how many yards. And we adamant we're going to make this happen. But the lawyers have said we can't do it in like physically in the arena whilst there's a crowd, which we're arguing with, but we, you know, we'll find a way of doing that.
I don't know what they're scared of though. A ball? The midgy?
Yeah.
What is the issue?
I think if you come to Crouchfest, you're sort of inherently or implicitly acknowledging and giving permission to potentially getting a ball in the face. Mm. I think you shouldn't rule it out.
So obviously as potentially the midge that Charlie was going to kick the ball at, I did go and look at his long pass accuracy in the Premier League over his entire, you know, tenure there. And it was around 51%. So we're talking Charlie's probably going to connect after 3 or 4 statistically. Yeah. So it's worrying for me. So this is good news for me, actually. It's good parts of my day.
Yeah, because the idea has developed. I can't remember if we talked about this on the podcast yet. But I did let George, who produced this, and Crouch here, I think we discussed it, that Charlie Adams should be hitting a midge's dick, which will be Dave dressed as a fly, a midge, in case you misheard, and with a sort of dildo-like apparatus between his legs.
Oh my God.
And then Charlie will hit balls from distance. I mean, it's never been done at Wembley.
Never been done. For good reason.
So what else could we do, Dave?
Dave, what is there? Have you been in touch with the Guinness World Record people? And what is there that we could achieve?
So I looked at records that can be achieved in 30 seconds. Yeah. So we want to get the person with the clock out. We want to get the job done. And then we want to move on with our Crouchfest. So a few that have come out. Number one, most double cheek kisses in 30 seconds. This was achieved by a French lady and a French man. Reynold and Sophie achieved this in 2013 with 116.
Are they just doing it to each other?
In 30.
Or is there like, you have to continually do different people?
I think it's the two. I think it's a duo.
Better with more people, I think. But we'd need Xavi for this, wouldn't we? Because there's that clip of him. I don't know who they are. This line of women appear and
Xavi.
Yeah.
So that's on the pitch, is it?
And they're double kissing him. So I think only do this if we get him, and then we just line Xavi. Up.
I could speak to Iniesta about that.
Yeah. Who would you attempt it with? I think Abs is a cop out for that. I think it would have to be Defoe. If Glenn Johnson turns up, that for me is a question mark of something that could be done.
I doubt he'd be there.
Should we move on to another one?
Yeah.
Now, for some reason, there's a lot of matchsticks involved. We've got matches snapped in half in 30 seconds. We've got most matches extinguished with the tongue in 30 seconds.
Oh, I like that.
One of those got some health and safety concerns.
No, that's interesting.
Oh, so hold on. So we're allowed to singe our tongues with matches on stage at Wembley, but we can't kick a football around.
But that's pressure. If you just sit there with your tongue out, right, the onus is on me to strike the match quickly. Well, you're just there with your tongue out and you get the world record. Yeah. See what I mean?
Valid point. You're doing all the work.
Yeah, that's a great
I'm taking
point.
All the risk, though.
That's crouch fest all over.
I found three that I believe we could easily do because there's no current holder for each of these records. So even if we completed one action, we will become the record holders. So Chris, for you, I've got the most lateral side-to-side jumps in 30 seconds. I'm thinking your ability in the pancake, getting up and down the touchline.
Well, no one's done it before, so I only need to do one to to get the record, right?
Absolutely.
What a fraud that is. I do one jump. Imagine a whole arena. Here comes the confetti.
I think you should do it.
Guinness Housery. I couldn't care less if anyone beats it. Yeah, yeah. I could not care less. Because the thing stays on the wall anyway. No one would see a world record on the wall of my house and then go and Google if it's ever been beaten. It's going to be a Guinness World. It's going to be a record in itself. A world record for the least amount of effort to go into a world record. Got loads of messages about the pod that we did, all about the mentality of footballers and the mentality that you have to have as a footballer in order to make it to the top. I thought it was a really good pod.
Mm. But yeah, there's lots of people who've got in touch saying that it was a help to them, which was nice.
Their kids are getting into football as well.
And parents as well, sort of like how my dad helped me really, and my mum. So hopefully it helps in some way.
And we've also had podcasts recently with Jermaine Defoe and Ed Sheeran.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting with Jermaine as well, getting into his head about his journey and stuff. Because everyone's got a different journey. I mean, don't just take my word for it. Like, that was my path, but everyone's got different paths. So it was interesting hearing Jermaine's one.
Yeah, so we thought we'd do a podcast today all about, well, it's getting back inside a footballer's head and talking about superstitions, which I know with you were massive. It was routine.
Yeah, they were. Not like, I had to, by the end, I had so many, I had to stop and be superstitious about not having a superstition, bizarrely. And that seemed to work for me.
So you went full circle.
Full circle, yeah. I was like, don't have any superstitions. And that be my superstition, if you know what I mean, because things were getting silly.
But superstitions are massive amongst players, right?
Yeah, I mean,
I bet you've seen some weird ones as well.
Yeah, you see, the start of games, people doing the most bizarre things, and it becomes just totally acceptable. You're just like, that's his thing. You know, when you sign a new player, you go, that's what he does, and you leave them to it.
Well, we've had loads of questions on this topic as well. So thank you so much if we do get round to doing one of your questions. And remember as well, if you do want to get involved in the podcast and you want to send a question, you can do it by going to thatpetercrouchpodcast.com. And there's a section there where you can submit any questions you like. You can also get tickets for Crouch Fest whilst you're there as well.
Crouch, you mentioned you're a bit of a superstitious person. What are the classic superstitions that you kind of believe in?
Well, things like walking under a ladder. You know, why would you take the risk? The mirror, that's 7 years. What? Why on earth would you break a mirror?
I think if you smash a mirror, you're probably not in a good place anyway.
But do you know what? I do like in general life, obviously there's loads of stuff that goes on with football, but taking myself out of football. So at school, someone told me that if you stand on all three drains, it's bad luck. But like I'll walk and I'll see three drains and I'll stand on two and walk around the last one.
Do you?
Yeah. But it's little things like that that like throughout my football career as well, like if I didn't do them, it would be in the back of your mind like, oh, is that why? I don't know. It's lots of footballers and lots of sportsmen are the same.
Mm. So let's take it to the dressing room then, Crouchy. 2 o'clock on a Saturday, you got a game at 3 o'clock. Mm. What is going on in the dressing room?
Well, it's complete carnage. Like if you think so many players that I've played with have got the most bizarre superstitions. When I was a young player, I had loads, like tie-ups. Had to be on like left one first, right one first. Shin pads had to be on a specific way. I wouldn't change my boots if I'd scored. Specific meals before and after if I'd score. I'd have to sleep like the one particular way. I'd have to have my pillow the right way. I would pray. so many.
I didn't know you were religious, Crouch.
Well, for goals, I am.
That's so, another classic, isn't it? I just realised that's on the chart of with I'd be a virgin at the top. That's in at number 6 or 7 now, surely.
Yeah, that was a banger. That was a real banger.
For goals, I am.
But I had loads. I'd come out. I'd always like look for my dad, and my dad would freak me out if I couldn't see my dad at a game, because he would always get there early, and I'd be able to wave to him, and that comforted me. And then when we did the lineup, I'd be there at the lineup. We'd shake hands, and at the end of every handshake, I would jump, head an imaginary ball. I would run as fast as I can. I would clap the fans on that far side. Then I would bend down and I would tie my right lace.
Every time?
Without fail, every match that I ever played in. This boils down to like early on. I remember when I was a kid, my boot coming off once. And me thinking, oh my God, like I can't have this happen to me again. So I'd always go, right, I'll tie it up so it's on properly, the right one. And so ever since then, that was just in my head. It might come off. Right. And that, it just sort of triggered. And then I ended up going, right, well, I played well in that. So and then I always did it.
So from a psychological perspective, the routine, it gives you an illusion of control. So every time that Crouchy's tying his boot, he's in control, which obviously helps you out in terms of reducing stress and eases the feeling of helplessness from a psychological perspective. Mm. So these routines that the players are doing are actually quite beneficial.
So if we were to see every game that you've done, it would be that same routine. It would be the imaginary header, run around.
Imaginary header, run, clap, lace.
So you see, I reckon other players would have seen you doing that when you were on good form and gone, shit, this is Crouchy's routine that he does. Did you ever catch anyone copying the same? Did suddenly someone start doing the same?
No, but you see it now. Like I know plenty of players who aren't religious crossing themselves, you know, because they've seen it on players that they admire.
Interesting.
You see it, like even with the kids, like they're all doing, you know, doing the hop on and like looking up at the sky and crossing themselves. Lots of players that they admire, they would copy, I think.
That's interesting. Doing the cross without being religious.
I've
kissing
seen
a ring and you're not married.
Wow.
Kids, you know, doing it on a Saturday afternoon now. Kids are kissing rings on a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
Because they've seen, you know, Suarez kisses tattoos. No tattoos on them.
Yeah.
Kissing tattoos.
Was there any that you saw that were kind of quirky to the point of like you sort of really noticed it with a player? And
well, John Terry with England training would have, he wouldn't be able to touch the ball in the dressing room with his feet. So, you know, lads would like throw him a ball and he'd just lift his feet up like that and like let it go past. He had a lot of superstitions. You know, he changed his boots constantly as well. Like he'd have a new pair for the start of the game, new pair at half time, and then a new pair for the next game. So,
that's an odd superstition, isn't it? Because it would normally be, surely that you ones. Have the same same ones and the fear that
And also like I would always change my shirt at half time. That became a thing. I always had long sleeve, but things change as well. Like lots of players now, they have new pairs of boots all the time. Like I couldn't do that. Like if I'd scored, I was, and then the sponsors would be like, no, you have to get in this pair. And I'm like, I've just scored 3 and 3. Yeah. Like,
would you have that discussion?
I'd rather not be sponsored.
Yeah, but you don't have that choice at that point, do you?
Yeah, but you do because I'd be like, well, how are you going to stop me? My agent had loads of issues with sponsors because I'd be in the boots from like 2 years previous because I was doing well.
So your agent would have to say to these guys, it's like, look, he's not wearing the boots.
I'm not wearing them, no. Yeah, I had loads of discussions like that. But like some people couldn't understand why you would be like that. But I was.
Did you know about this? So Chelsea received complaints from the FA after they consistently left their dressing room late before kickoffs.
No, I didn't know about this.
I've got a bit on this. So it was all because John Terry would only use his favourite urinal in the dressing room. Frank Lampard and Ashley Cole both adopted it as their lucky urinal. And as the run of victories continued, that resulted in the whole squad queuing to use the same single urinal, despite there being 3 to choose from. So kickoffs, like the players weren't coming out because there was a queue to use one urinal.
Doesn't surprise me in the slightest.
But it's almost like contagious superstition being contagious. It's worked for one. He's recommended it to Lamps.
Yeah, but
the whole squad are obviously following their leaders. Like, it's actually insane. And it feels a bit like, you know where you try to get your kid to do a wee before you go on holiday? It's like, even the junior members of that squad must be like, John, I just don't need to go. I don't need one. Just try.
Squeeze it out.
It's a long game.
Terry's behind, holding up. Just try.
Sergio Goycochea, Argentinian goalkeeper in the 1990 World Cup quarterfinal, needed the toilet so bad after the game that he was told that he wasn't allowed to leave the field. So went on to the side of the pitch and urinated before a shootout. And then they went on to win that shootout, the quarterfinal. Because of that, he did the same thing in the semi-final against Italy, and they won that game as well, taking them through to the World Cup final in 1990.
Why? It's a game. Why would you stop? Why would you... If he's done it, they've got through. It just feels sort of a natural progression.
But then whenever I see a ref run off the pitch to go do the VAR check, I think that has urinal vibes about it. The way they're stood there in a kind of... Do you know what I mean? Like this sort of enclosed... What's we're on this? It's something I've noticed. Like, why do they set the TV up right where fans can lean over shout? It's just shouting.
It should have like the old school cameras with the curtain at the back of them that was attached, and you get in and take the photo.
Yeah, I know the ones you mean, the black and white photos.
Black and white photos, and the flash goes off, the big bulb. We use that for VAR. Go in there and you put the curtain over you, and then you just watch it in peace.
Imagine Gogglebox, but there's fans all around abusing you and telling you what they're saying,
and
the VAR
players,
is.
And both it's, coaching staffs.
And the benches kind of get near. I think it's... I don't know why they have it so exposed. Or they should just run into a little booth.
Cubicle.
Like a cubicle. You know, like
a phone box or something like that.
A phone box is a nice
touch. Like, you just go straight into a phone box, blacked out phone box. You know, and also they can take like fight. So it's totally noise cancelling.
Yeah. So they can concentrate.
It's totally silent. They go into a little oasis of VAR.
It's bizarre because it's almost like as if they... It's a VARDIS.
It's a VARDIS.
But it's almost like what they do...
That's amazing. It's a VARDIS.
What they do is they run over to an area and their whole job is to concentrate and watch this screen. I just think... That is such a ludicrous situation to put
them in. So much going on. Fans and coaches, everyone, players, everyone's involved.
Yeah. I want to see a VARDIS at Anfield. That's the dream, isn't it?
I just think the refs, you know, they get enough abuse, don't they? Like, give them 5. Give them 10 seconds out of the pressure environment to make a decision.
Imagine when they go in the booth. I like your idea that it's completely blacked out from the crowd. So they get in there and they're like... Fuck this.
As I can imagine.
Or there's a little beer in there. Yeah. Or a little
Just a little Fosters.
Take five.
Right, let's give this a look. My time now.
Yeah.
Did you see the VAR refs in Greece that had a takeaway delivered during the game? Don't know what your thoughts are on this. So the camera's panned. You know when it goes to Stockley Park and there's a camera in the corner, you see the back of a ref's head. On this one, the camera panned to the VAR room just as they were getting a... like Deliveroo orders.
Oh my God, really? Is this footage out there?
Yeah, it's on there. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, there's, so you can see it's cut to it and there's a takeaway being delivered just before. I mean, I'm not against it. They're watching a TV. I don't see why they can't.
First problem, surely to referee as best as they can, they should be fully hydrated and fed pre-game so they can switch on.
VAR refs aren't warming up the same way that...
Well, that's the problem. That's why it's not working.
But do you think like the only issue with that is if they're getting delivered during a match, you know, and they knock and it goes, you know, Deliveroo, and then they turn round and miss a key moment whilst they're getting a pepperoni?
But they're not there to watch the moments as they happen. They just need someone to go, fucking hell, like, have a look at that. Rewind. If anything, it's the perfect job for doing that. They don't have to watch in real time.
No, but you know what it's like. You know, you like go to the toilet or something like that and you come back and like, oh, what did I miss? Like,
yeah, but that's
you missed
why,
a huge VAR incident.
But you know sometimes when they're like, God, they're taking ages on this. They're having a real look. They're not. They're getting a Deliveroo and...
Do you think it's right that they've got cameras on them at all times then? Yeah,
I don't see the need.
The other concern I'd say is where's the pizza come from? So let's say as the... opposition or one of the team's presidents sent them a delivery order or have they done a whip round or has the lead referee paid for it? Like there's concerns there.
Yeah, ethical concerns around who's funding the deliveries to VAR referees around the world.
Right lads, let's get into Kolo Touré. He always had to be the last player to enter the pitch. And in one game, Arsenal started the second half with 9 men after William Gallas was delayed at half-time after receiving treatment and Touré refused to come on before his teammate.
Yeah, I get it. I get that. And like I say, you know, an African player there, like some of them were really, you know, took it seriously, very seriously. And I'm sure Kolo Touré is the same.
Was this not just an Eggy Boff scenario?
Potentially. You can see Gallas calling an Eggy Boff.
Just was always hit every time. Fucking hell, you done me again.
Crouch, here's his teammate. What, you know, you're starting the second half with 9 men. What are you saying to him? Kolo, get on the pitch.
You can't be, it's ridiculous, taking it too far, isn't it? Like, there are ones that go too far, without doubt.
We talk about players. What about managers? Did you see any managers with superstitions?
Yeah, Harry used to be quite open with his superstitions. I remember at Southampton, he wore this dog tie and we won and he wore it for the next sort of 3 games. So I remember noticing it because it was a bit of a rascal tie, to be honest. And then the fact that he wore it 3 games on the trot, I was like, that's a superstition.
Did the kickoff time change your pre-match superstitions?
Yeah, I always find that the night games, like, because it's the day of the game, like I'd rather get the game out early because... the whole morning, the whole afternoon and the whole evening is taken up with like superstitions. Like the Champions League nights, for instance, would just annoy me so much. I'd wake up, I'd have to do a specific breakfast. Then it'd be like a specific lunch. You'd have to do something. And then you'd go, right, you've got 2 hours to go to sleep. And that sleep period before a night game is so strange. I think we go to sleep sort of between 3 and 5.
I don't know how you do that.
It's so weird. Like going in, and often we'd be rooming with someone and he might have a different routine. Like Wayne Rooney, for instance, wouldn't be able to sleep ever. Like he was just constantly on the go. And I imagine rooming with him, but you're in the where you need to sleep. It became sort of like just a complete head fuck. The fact that it was completely silent and you'd think, right, I'm about to go into a cauldron of like 60,000 people.
It's so weird.
And like, you're just in a bed on your own and like, you're thinking, I could stay here.
It's so weird.
I'm not coming out.
You could stay there and like have no pressure, no nervous energy, no anxiety.
But it's similar in a sense to like you work in the morning, you know, you've got a big night out in the evening. Sometimes you need to get that nap in.
I find it just so funny, the idea of all these footballers being put to bed at 3 in the afternoon. Like,
taken to the toilet and then like, put to bed.
But it does feel a bit, so true. It does feel a bit like that, because nothing about these guys must have wanted to sleep. But, you know, the manager has said it's got to happen.
It's so true.
So bizarre.
Like, and also, you know, some of the young lads usually don't get up for breakfast. So they lie in till about 11 and then they can't really sleep in the afternoon. What I found was my optimal level towards the end was like, I'd get up reasonably early because I had kids that by then, and then I'd have breakfast and then I'd get up and I'd hang around and I might have a cup of tea with the lads and we'd chat for a bit and then I'd just go to bed about 1. But I'd hang around, I might do something, and then I'd have lunch, and then I'd go back to my room, and that's when I'd sleep. I'd have like an hour and a half. And there's nothing better than when you've done things correctly, and then you step onto the pitch at, say, 7:30, the game for 7:45, and you go like, and you feel wired. Like, there's nothing better than that. Like, oh, but I've done it the other way around, where I've gone, I feel a bit tired. Like, not tired, but you're just not at that optimal level of firing. And there's nothing worse than that. And then you think, oh my God, and then it's in your head. And you think, because it's the slightest thing that gets in your head that puts you off.
Have you boys heard about Bruce Grobbelaar's passion for piss?
He told me about his, obviously urinating on the Anfield. Let me just read this to you. I think it's better if I read it to you. Back in 92, during Grobbelaar's testimonial game, the goalkeeper had taken a sponsorship with a Zambezi lager. The company sent out a witch doctor to Anfield to present a bottle of lager to Grobbelaar. However, they may have left more than just the beverage. It was said that the man had placed a curse on the club, meaning that they wouldn't win the title without the Zimbabwean stopper and goal. He went around on the post and put his goat's tail, put his water on the post of both sides, got the microphone and said, if you don't have the jungle man Bruce Grobbelaar in here, you won't win the title. For years, Grobbelaar sat at home and watched the club fail to win a league title for 28 years. He thought it was his fault and he brought the witch doctor in. Yet he was hopeless to do anything about the curse. Grobbelaar decided the only way to lift the curse would be to urinate on both sets of goalposts. He attempted this first in 2013-14 season, but Grobbelaar would only get as far as the cop end, being thrown out before the stopper could make it to the Anfield Road end. So he urinated on one end and couldn't get to the other because he'd get thrown out. And he believes, he told me this, I was working on BT Sport with him and he was a guest and he said to me that he genuinely believes that this curse was on Liverpool.
Okay.
And the reason they didn't win the league was because a witch doctor had done it to him and the fact that he wasn't in goal. But he's not finished. He said, I fulfilled my task. Last season, I played in a corporate game at Anfield. We were in the dressing room and the guy said, you have to do the business today. I said, okay. So I took a water bottle, poured the water out, peed in the bottle, and came back. First half at the cop end, I splashed it all over the post. Second time, I came down the Anfield Road end and I splashed it all over the other posts. The campaign following, Liverpool went on to win the title.
Nothing right. To do with Jurgen Klopp, nothing to do with the players. I think that's the reason.
So Grobbelaar's piss produces success.
I think so.
So let's get him to Crouch Fest. 100%.
What a Grobbelaar, 100%. Both ends. I don't think Wembley Arena's cursed in the way that
We can't take any risks. It's a
my worry is once you start mentioning the word curse, it does get in your head a little bit. I don't know why urine cures it, but apparently it does.
Maybe just Grobbelaar though. That's the thing. It's so massive of him to go to firstly acknowledge there's a curse, but then to go to think that the way to break the curse is to piss on the post, like. That's incredible, isn't it?
He's marking his territory. They said that they won't win the league if Grobbelaar's not there. So in actual fact, he is there. Does help Alisson's pretty good as well.
It's one of the best football stories I've ever heard.
Let's get him on and we'll chat to him about it. Because I spoke to him about it. And because he said something about on air. And then I spoke to him off air. And it was actually really interesting.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We've got a few more superstitions that we've had a look at, Crouchy. Which ones have caught your eye?
Right, England and Barcelona midfielder Kira Walsh puts her shin pads on the wrong legs. No, I'm no shin pad expert.
We've got one on the pod though, Crouchy.
Thank God we have. Yeah. Chris, talk us through this.
Well, as you say, it's a superstition thing, isn't it? I'm just a fan of, you know, just a bit of a kind of frontal protection to either the left or right shin.
Quite similar.
yeah.
Lots of people put on shin pads in different orders like boots on in the same order always. Do you do that? I reckon you do that. It's probably force of habit. You put on like one particular shoe before the other.
Yeah, and shin pads first, obviously. So
put on what do you mean?
So Chris has just got out of the shower pre-football. I don't know why he's showering before football, but the shin pads are the first thing that go on.
Yeah, if you got me stood there fully naked, like I'm probably
pads first.
Padding up.
Like you put pants on.
Yeah, but, all right, yeah. Pants realistically, first. Pants, pads, shorts.
The pads don't go on before the shorts. They don't.
Crouchy, that's his superstition. No, you can't argue with it.
Superstition, mate. It's, you know, I wouldn't be the player I was if I didn't go pants, pads.
Pants, pads.
Shorts. Or should we just encourage everyone? Shin pads first.
Shin pads first.
Pads, pants. Shorts, nah, shirt,
if anyone out there goes pads first, you need locking up.
It's got to be done. Pads first, everyone. Come on, do it for a couple of weeks. Let us know. I reckon that feels liberating.
Well, let us know. Let us know, guys, if anyone goes pads first.
Yeah.
Or if you don't go pads first, just try it.
Or go pads first and then get a result. Then you'll have to go pads first every week.
That would be amazing. If you just like a new signing or a new player, just test the water and go pads first.
Don't say anything as well.
Don't say a word. Just go pads, pants.
Let's talk about goalkeepers. Thibaut Courtois touches his chin when the camera's in front of him whenever he sings the national anthem.
Makes sense to me.
It'd be great to understand for goalkeepers as well if they could get in touch to the podcast whether they put the gloves on before anything like the shin pads as well, just to understand.
Yeah,
there.
The goalie equivalent is gloves first before
gloves pads.
Else.
But I wanted to bring up some quotes from Courtois on the Ballon d'Or, Crouchy. I'm not sure if you were across these, but I'd love to get your reaction, your thoughts, and whether he's right or wrong. So obviously at the Ballon d'Or evening, he was interviewed by L'Equipe. And he said to them, without a good goalkeeper, you don't win a trophy. And in football awards, sometimes we forget that. People vote faster for a striker who scores goals than a goalkeeper. Too bad. But we need to continue to show that goalkeepers are really important. Last year, if we won the Champions League, it was thanks to Vinicius, Valverde, Benzema or Rodrigo. It was also thanks to Courtois.
Goalkeepers never won Ballon d'Or.
Yeah, Lev Yashin. Mm. And then you've obviously got few players have been close. Manuel Neuer been close.
But it's another... Is he basically saying there's another example here of being a bit keeperist? Well, what do you think?
Well, I just think it should be it's a totally different sport, isn't it? Like, I feel
but
like they...
It's not.
It is.
This is exactly his problem. Like, he is part of the same team. He's exactly... He is as important...
I'm not saying he's less important.
You're
I'm saying
it's totally
playing
a different sport.
He's playing a different sport.
He's not. He's playing
he's
football.
He's catching it. He's playing a different.
But that's football.
How can you? It's not football because it's hands. But there's nothing foot about it.
This is mental. I don't understand how we keep coming back to this. If the goalkeeper within the rules is told to use his hands, that is the rules of football.
No, I agree with him. I agree with what he's saying and the fact that we should have a Ballon d'Or, a Ballon keeper d'Or.
So you think keepers are playing a different sport?
Well, it's not. They've got all different rules than anywhere else.
So I keep getting these sort of ranty voicemails from Ramsdale. I played one when we spoke to Defoe, and he fires these ones out. You can hear he's in his car, probably on the way to training.
Yeah, he's obviously listening to the pod. and not is he? He's not happy, is he?
He's not happy. Have a listen to the latest one.
Starkey, it's me again. And again, I'm listening to the pod on the way to footy. Listen, well, goalkeepers are better at finishing as a finishing drill than players will be. Not in terms of actual overall finishing, but they do it every day. This thing, what Crouch is saying about strikers would be best for the goalkeepers, but they wouldn't. They miss the target 80% of the time. Yes, they can put it in the top corners, but it's about working the goalkeeper. I'm not happy with this segment. I'm going to be honest. Crouchy, he's letting me down. And the reason no players, or hardly any players, will go into goalkeeper coaching, saying they ain't got a fucking clue about goalkeeping. Whereas goalkeepers have to know about goalkeeping and what every other 10 outfield players are doing. As you can tell, I'm not happy by the amount of voice notes I've sent you. But Crouchy needs to be educated.
You know, I'm obviously winding keepers up.
I've got to give a big shout out to Rambo, though, who his 50th performance. I don't know if you saw this on his Instagram. It's a bit parchy to himself, but that's okay. He put 5-star performance. This was a caption under picture. 5-star performance for my 50th Arsenal appearance. Then he's put, if you get knocked down, get back up even stronger, feels like a mix of Bat Stronger and Chumbawamba.
No, that's it's in between, isn't it?
Both. Unless I've misread the room.
I think that's a pod reference.
Yeah.
But listen, you know, I am only joking. You know, I love him as a keeper. I love him as a man. He's a friend of the pod. I feel like Courtois' shouts are, I'm not sure about them, if I'm honest. I would like a goalkeeper to win it. You know, I think there's been like Schmeichel, there's been, keepers who have redefined the position, Edison,
Manuel Neuer.
Alisson Neuer. You know, there's people that maybe should have had more of a sniff.
So, but they shouldn't be tokenistic, is what you're saying. Then it would be wrong for them to do a whole year of like every nomination is a goalkeeper, just to kind of balance.
I think there's been keepers that could have potentially won it, but I don't know if you should come out and talk about it.
Looking at the votes, it does look anti-keeperist in a sense of the Ballon d'Or top 10 last season, Crouchy. Mm. Courtois got 82 votes. Fewer than Kylian Mbappe, Mohamed Salah, Lewandowski, Kevin De Bruyne, Sadio Mane, and of course Benzema won it, deserved so.
Okay, but can I just step in there?
Go on.
Right, all right. Well, who would you go pay money to watch, right? Benzema, Mane, De Bruyne, Lewandowski, Salah, Mbappe, or Courtois?
Crouchy, I pay money to
last
go
on the
see...
list.
Backman, you know.
Yeah, but would you rather see Dan Gosling?
I pay money to see Gosling.
That's irrelevant.
By the way, great players, both of them. Gosling and Backman.
Yeah, great players. But what I'm saying is here,
the Ballon d'Or is about
the Ballon d'Or is about seeing something amazing, like something different.
But
like,
wasn't that the Champions League final? 9 saves in the final, the most made since 2003 for Real Madrid against Liverpool. Massive performance. Penalty saves in that tournament saved a Real Madrid an extra 5 goals by post-shot expected goals.
I'm not saying he wasn't a good goalkeeper in that season, but Benzema, think of the last-minute goals, the hat-trick
the
against
two
Chelsea.
Hat-tricks. Just another quote from the L'Equipe interview. Courtois referred to himself as almost a playmaker.
That's like amateur beginner or whatever it was.
Courtois a playmaker.
He said, here in Madrid, I also start the plays. It is I am the first pass who decides where we're going to mount the attack or how we're going to play through the rivals' pressure. Today, you're almost a playmaker. Goalkeepers are much more important than you think.
Passing it 5 yards to the centre-half. He's literally centre-half going next to him and he's Wilson Palacios in it. It's 5 yards out and they're building it. It's 58 more passes before it ends up in the back of the net.
To be fair, it's
a big shout.
I agree with Crouchy on that a bit because the thing is with that, if he was to nail consistently passes that head up and then lead to a goal, he'd have a point.
Edison Haaland? Recently in the Premier League. Yeah. So you're saying if they're getting...
That was a glorious pass.
But, you know, sometimes the ball goes in the crowd and me or someone around me throws the ball back in. I don't claim that that's...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 15 passes before I threw it back in to the fullback.
Crouchy, how many assists does a goalkeeper need to get in a season to win the Ballon d'Or for you?
the Ballon d'Or now, like, players are getting like one in one for a season, yeah? So they're getting 65 goals in 65 games. That Messi, Ronaldo, that's the kind of standards we're saying, right? If you keep 65 clean sheets in 65 games, I will walk the Ballon d'Or to your house.
Collectively on the podcast, we spoke about how the clean sheet is the entire defence, but now...
Just where does he live? Madrid. I will swim the channel with the Ballon d'Or in my hand and walk to his house and give it to him. There you go, Seymour. The gauntlet's been set.
It's that time of the podcast where Peloton asks us to check in on Chris's fitness journey. I know you've been really busy recently, Chris. How you been getting on?
If I'm being really honest with this whole Peloton thing, I'm finding it a bit challenging because I've got a new job. I'm up really early. I get up at 4 in the morning at the moment, out my house by 4:15 to do the breakfast show that I do. It's and so you get tired later on the day, and then obviously I'm not saying this is work, this is fun. We come in here, we chat football, it's great fun. But I've also got two young kids, and it's all just a bit of a balance at the moment. What I'm enjoying about this whole experience with Peloton is feeling that I can go do 5-10 minutes here or there, or if I have more time, I can do 20 minutes. Or if the kids are screaming and it all feels a bit much, I can jump out and do half hour. And that's what I'm finding is helpful about Peloton and everything we're doing with them, is for someone like me that is very good at making excuses as to why you don't do fitness, I am finding it's a very kind of accessible or flexible way of going about it. So yeah, look, I'm not going to be one of those people that is spending hours every day. I just want to feel a bit better about myself. And the truth is, I have been feeling a lot better when I'm, say, shattered or feeling like I'm shattered. And then I'll go and even do a small amount, and I feel a lot better for it coming out of it. And that's part of it. Look, I'm not going to be at Crouch Fest ripped. I'm not going to stand out there looking like Ronaldo, chiseled. But the whole aim of this is just to feel a bit better about myself. And hopefully if I can do that, other people might relate to it as well. And that's what Peloton are hoping. So yeah, I feel like I am at that stage with it, and being flexible about how I go and do that is what is winning for me.
I agree with that, Chris. Who have you been working with this week?
Yeah, I quite like that, Crouchy. Yeah, it suggests that it's kind of collaborative between me and the instructor that I'm watching on the screen.
Yeah.
I've gone back to Ben, actually, our boy Ben.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I just find that...
Why is weird, that?
Well, because weirdly, my personal best seem to be with him. And maybe that's because I'm slightly more invested in him, because I know he's a big fan of the podcast, and he's also been sort of helping us.
Subconsciously, are you superstitious?
Well, maybe if I view him in manager terms, I'm trying to impress him a bit more.
So does Ben get the best out of you
Weirdly, terms? I think he does, yeah. I think he's my...
Harry Redknapp.
My Harry Redknapp. Maybe he is.
Possibly the first time he's ever been compared to Harry Redknapp.
But I find that he's sort of encouraging without being patronising. So one of the things I did this week, you know what I was saying about just trying to fit in some of these sessions and classes and just trying to do them because you feel a bit better afterwards. I did this 20-minute full body strength class with Ben. I wasn't really sure what to expect from it.
What did it involve, Chris?
Well, it's just very encouraging with it. You know, rather than being patronising, because obviously he's a very good-looking bloke. So for him to be trying to claim I can get to the same fitness, do you know what I mean? Strength and that. Whereas actually it was a very good class. And I don't know, everything I've been a bit dubious about before, I've kind of proven myself wrong with it. I actually use this and these classes a bit of an escape from everything at the moment.
Great episode today, chaps. We spoke goalkeepers, superstitions. We're looking at world records that we can achieve and get into the Guinness Book. Awesome.
Yeah, it's been good. I enjoyed it. Nice going back over the old superstitions. What I realised when coming here today, that actually I've still got loads.
Yeah, let us know if any of this resonated with you on social. Just get in touch with us, or you can get on the website, thatpetercrouchpodcast.com.
Yes, and also if you put pads on first and notice an increase in performance, please get in touch.
Yeah, no pictures needed on that one. And also don't think this is an open invite to pads only at Crouch Fest. You won't get in.
No, pads only. Pads and pants, potentially. But
what is the streaker situation at Crouch Fest? We should be prepared.
I don't know.
We'll deal with that another week. Chumbawamba, everyone.
Chumbawamba.
Chumbawamba.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This episode is brought to you by aloadofpricks.net. We are the experts in selling houses. Chris couldn't sell his house. What did you do, Chris?
I couldn't sell my house for love nor money, Crouchy. Three different offers I had, all at the last minute, fell through. I turned round to my wife and said, what can we do to sell this house? Every estate agent is failing us. Then I told her, let's go to aloadofpricks.net.
But Chris, what did a load of pricks do for you?
They were brilliant, Crouchy. They sold my house right away. The sign had barely gone up when a well-dressed gentleman came along and offered me twice the asking price.
Chris, would you use a load of pricks again?
I'd use them every time, Crouchy.
Go to aloadofpricks.net. They will sell your house like no other. Load of pricks, load of pricks.net.